Welcome to Confabulation, the podcast. I'm Matt Goldberg, and these are stories, true as we can tell them. In the moonlight, in the fire, in the light, in the cold, in the dark, in the city, in the park, in the soil, in the light, in the noon, in the night. In a touch, in a body.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another podcast. I'm Deb Vanslett.
And I'm Matt Goldberg. How are you doing today, Deb?
I'm not too bad, Matt. I'm not too bad. It's, I spent a lot of time in the country the past couple of weeks, and I feel like I have my feet in two worlds, really two distinct worlds. I'm living a rural kind of life with rural internet, gardens, and it really does feel like my second job. In the summertime. This is not the first summer that this is that I do this. So, but the disconnect in a way feels a little greater now because to come back to the city, to be back in a kind of COVID and highly politicized moment. And it's not to say that, you know, you don't get news in the country and we're not following things and talking to friends and neighbors there, but it's different to be out there. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I mean, I'm split a little bit differently. I'm still doing if you've heard this podcast before, my usual routines of fathering and teaching and surviving, getting through the pandemic. But, you know, June to me in Montreal is festival season. And I'm really hit with the sadness and longing for Fringe Festival, pretty soon for Just for Laughs and Jazz Festival as well. It's been kind of exciting because the Montreal Fringe has been running the series online, This Is Not a Fringe, a series of digital shorts that they're sharing through YouTube, which has been fun, and you and I both have contributed some stories to that. But I love catching up on it, but it's not, you know, it's not exactly the same. I'm so grateful to Amy and Kenny for keeping this project, for doing this work, because it's a little taste of Fringe, and I did have a beer in my hand as I was prepping my story to really get that Fringe experience. But Fringe Theater has been a part of my life for like 20 years, so I really miss that right now on a beautiful June day like this.
Yeah, the weather's perfect for being outside.
Listening to music on a terrace with a bunch of weirdos from all over the world, that's where I want to be right now.
Do you think we're getting there? Are we inching our way to that? I mean, we're obviously outside a lot more, not just because of the weather, but, you know, also because of where we're at in the pandemic.
You know, I've seen a lot more people outside, obviously. I think we've all experienced that, and it's simultaneously exciting and frustrating. I really don't know. I am so nervous as someone who runs events about events starting up again and then there being another wave of pandemic. And I think it's going to be so hard to get people to come out to live shows again in the near future. I just hope we take it all easy. We take it safe for the next little while so that it doesn't become a threatening, fearful prospect.
Exactly.
But you got to get a little sun. You got to get a little fresh air.
No, you got to get a little sun. You got to see a few people. You know, you've got to move around outside. And, you know, as for live shows, well, we'll just see. We will just have to see. We have no idea how that's going to pan out in September.
Our guest today, who I had the opportunity to interview, it's very clear from the interview audio that she is enjoying this beautiful weather. Let's talk about our story for this week. Our theme that night was connections, and it was a special show in cooperation with the Phi Center in honor of Black History Month. We had a guest host that night, as well as a whole slate of people of color telling stories. In fact, our story today and our interview guest was that host, Kadi Diop, a Montreal-based improviser, performer, producer, and generally awesome human being.
So let's listen to Kadi's story, and afterwards, Matt catches up with Kadi, so stay tuned for that.
Welcome, everyone, to Confabulation! My name is Kadi Diop. I am honored to be here among you all for this beautiful Black History Month edition of Confabulation under the theme of connection. I'd like to take a minute before we start to actually acknowledge that this is Black History Month, one. So now is the time to love your Black friends. Extra hard. Okay? Love them all the time, but love them extra right now. But I'd also like to acknowledge that the event that we're holding is being held on unceded Indigenous territory. And it's important because I come from an immigrant family. And when your roots are complicated, you have to be able to acknowledge the roots of where you stand. Okay? So for the past 20 years, I have been working in community development. I've been working with kids, running programs, working with parents, helping them raise their kids, working with municipal government. I don't really know what they do. And the thing about that kind of work that no one ever says until you start working in the industry is that it is draining. It will literally tug at your heart all the time. It tugs at your heart when you're sitting with a child who has not bathed in days. It tugs at your heart when a parent brings their tax report and you see that two parents raising five kids have made a collective income of $5,000. It tugs at your heartstring when a child loses their parent and comes back to school the day after because there's no one there to take care of them. Now, as you can imagine, it takes a toll. And beyond venting with my colleagues over too many cups of coffee, I've reached a breaking point. A point where I couldn't really get out of bed in the morning. I couldn't really focus. I couldn't really handle having anyone come into my office and tell me their sad little story. I had integrated all of their problems as mine. Now I went to see a therapist, because that's what one does when you reach that kind of point. And my therapist said, "Caddy, you've been doing this for 20 years. When's the last time you took a vacation?" And I said, "What's a vacation?" She said, "Well, come on. When's the last time you had time off?" And I said, "Well, I closed the center, but that's when I take time to build new programming. That's the time where I train staff. That's the time where I actually get to do work because no one's coming into my office because the doors are literally locked. And I keep all the lights off so that everyone thinks, and I park very far away so that no one actually knows that I'm there." So she said, "Well, you've got a couple of days coming up. Why don't you, you know, think about taking a vacation and just sort of center yourself a little bit. Come back to you." So I did. I went to my trusty old friend Google and I started looking at places to go on vacation. Now, anyone who works in the community field will tell you we do not make vacation money. So what I did find was an ashram in Saint-Sauveur that I could drive to, and that I could camp at for a lesser price. And I was like, this is my jam. I've seen Eat, Pray, Love. I have read Eat, Pray, Love. If Julia Roberts can do it, and Elizabeth Gilbert, I got this. I'm your man. Let's go. I get in my car, have one last cup of coffee, a small panic attack, and I hit the 15. And I'm driving and I'm listening to like all these podcasts with like Brené Brown and all these people telling me that, you know, I can be imperfect and that I am wonderful as I am and that when I center myself, I will find myself and everything will be tip top. And I get to the ashram. And I'm like expecting, I don't know what I'm expecting. Let's be honest, like it's an ashram. I'm like, it's an ashram in Quebec. So I get there, and it's incredibly beautiful. It's an idyllic space. It's really like green and lush, and there's like this giant peace tree. And I was like, "Oh crap! What did I get myself into?" I go to reception. I tell them, hey, I'm Caddy. I booked for 4 days, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, yeah, no problem. And I start noticing out of the corner of my eye that everyone is dressed the same. Everyone's wearing like what looks like scrub pants and a yellow t-shirt. And I was like, cool. I brought yoga pants and summer camp t-shirts. So I definitely don't fit in here. Okay. And the lady at the reception is very kind and very patient with me. And I was like, I'm very anxious. I have no idea what's going on. Tell me all the details. When do I go to yoga? When do I go to meditation? What do you mean meditation? Is it comfortable? Because I don't know that I want to wake up at 5 a.m. and go sit on the floor. Blah, blah. And she's like, okay, ma'am. Breathe. And she looks at me with this knowing look and points me towards this hiking trail. And she says, you can set up your tent anywhere along the trail. And I say, got this. I pick up my travel backpack, put it on my back. I pick up the IKEA bag containing a comfortable pillow because, vacation, right? And all of my stuff, and I start walking up this mountain. And I'm walking. I'm walking, and I'm looking for a place to plant my tent. And there are none. And I keep walking, and I keep walking, and at this point, I'm not going to lie, I mean, I'm fairly out of shape, and I was like, where am I? What is happening? And I see a little clearing after 20 minutes of walking. And in that clearing, there is a little spot covered by some tree branches, and I go, aha. Here it is, my oasis on the mountain. This is for me. I set up my tent, put on my yoga outfit, tell myself that I'm gonna blend in, take 3 very long breaths, and start hiking down the mountain. And I get downstairs just in time for the evening yoga class. Evening yoga class that is attended by people of all ages, sizes, etc. It's wonderful. Except half the class is standing on your freaking head. And here I am, pretending to do yoga, thinking, this is vacation? This is supposed to help me feel good? I've taken yoga before, like it's all right, it's cool. I got a downward dog situation that I can hold for a bit and all that, but why are you asking me to stand on my head? And why does, like, what is going on? And I start having all these feelings. And once the yoga class is done, yoga class that I will admit I spent half of lying on my back, breathing, which is code for trying not to cry. And I head towards dinner. And I get there and there's this long line of children, adults, seniors, you name it, in line to eat this beautiful vegetarian food, which I was very excited about. And I notice that everyone looks like they've drank Kool-Aid because they're all standing bright-eyed and with a half smile. No matter what, whether they were scraping food off of their plates or, you know, serving food, everyone was just so damn happy. And I was starting to become a little bit resentful. I get my little dish full of like okra cooked in like some tasty tomato stuff, and it's beautiful, and I'm real happy. And I grab my tray and I go onto the little balcony area, and there's a bunch of picnic tables, and all of a sudden I feel like I'm in the first day of school. Where the hell are you supposed to sit? Everybody looks the same. Everyone has this cheesy grin on their face. I'm on the verge of panic attack number I don't know how many, and I'm afraid. I'm afraid of going up to people and asking them just for like space to sit, just a chit chat, just someone to tap me on the shoulder and say, hey, we've all been here. In 3 days, you will be smiling and bright eyed just like the rest of us. And so I find a little corner on a little picnic table and I sit down and I stare at my food. And I eat it, and I enjoy it, and that at least is solace. And this big dude, the only other black person around, walks by. And I look at him expecting us to do the nod, you know, like, hello. I see you, you see me. We also see that no one here looks like us. Mm-hmm. And he looks at me with the same look as everyone else, and I'm like, damn it. There goes my chance. Finish eating dinner, go back up, because I'm like, oh, great, we've got meditation, it's getting cold, and then I have to come back down to brush my teeth. So I go, no, 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 I'm going to go up that mountain once, grab all my stuff, bring it down, so I don't have to go up and down 20 minutes of hiking every time I want to do something. Grab my stuff, come back down, cross the same man again. And so I decide to be courageous. I say, hi. And like promptly melt on the inside. And he looks at me with like the kindest eyes you've ever seen. And he goes, namaste. I'm like, oh God, no. Start introducing myself. He tells me that his name is Hanuman. Now, anyone who's seen Black Panther, because that is my cultural reference, will understand that Hanuman is the god of monkeys in Hinduism. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about the only black man here being named after a god of monkeys, but whatever. And we start chit-chatting, and he actually helps me set up tarps underneath my tent because it's supposed to rain and all that. And I was like, oh, I was like, you really are a blessing. I'm so grateful that I met you. And he says, don't worry. Here, you're in a magical space. Things will find you when you need them. And I'm like, come on, I've heard the Rolling Stones song. I know you can't always get what you want, like, and all that, but I obviously don't say this out loud because I'm trying to be polite and I have a friend. But deep down inside, I'm like freaking out because I'm like, this place is magical. I'm not so much here for the woo-woo. I'm here for the breathing, and I'm just here for the reducing the anxiety. And I go about the rest of my evening, and I sit down in meditation in this beautiful, massive hall, surrounded by hundreds of people who all at the same time start singing, Jaya Ganesha, Jaya Ganesha, Jaya Ganesha Paima. And I'm sitting in the back, and I'm like, huh? What is this? And I see a little booklet, and I open it, and I see there's like Sanskrit is written out in English phonetically, which makes me feel much better. And I'm like, I'm just not gonna sing along, but I'm gonna like, you know, maybe like wiggle a bit and like feel the vibes and start like listening to the lecture after meditation. And it's very interesting, but it doesn't necessarily connect to me. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna keep going. We'll see what happens. Next day, wake up, 5 a.m., meditate again. And if I'm honest, I fell asleep. And, go to yoga, have food, go to yoga, do another thing, etc. And I try really hard to drink the Kool-Aid too. I try to like smile at people when I cross paths with them, and I try to feel the goodness of the space and the magic and the this and the that. And at some point, the third day after the morning yoga class, I'm folding towels because we have to all, you know, for 1 hour contribute to the space by doing chores and things like that, and it's great. And I'm folding these towels, and I'm folding these towels, and I'm like, I just want to go home. I have been here for 3 days, and all I do is have freaking panic attacks. I'm nervous. I'm afraid. None of this makes sense. The gods have not spoken to me. The anxiety has not gone away. I am tired of hiking up and down that goddamn mountain. I need a hot dog. Not made out of tofu. And after we all help out, we sit down, we eat, and I see that there's cake. And anyone here who knows me knows that cake is how you get me. Cake is the incarnation of all that is good in the universe, because it is doughy and it is sweet and it is creamy and And I get all of my meal and I'm excited because I'm getting to the table with the cake. And then I see that there is no more cake. And I start thinking to myself, this place sells lies. Nothing but lies. And I'm sitting down and I'm poking at my plate and I'm like frustrated and angry, and all I want to do is go home until this lovely lady monk comes up to me and she says to me, "Oh, I'm so full. I see that you don't have cake. Would you like mine?" And at that moment, my heart grew kind of like the Grinch's. It just expanded and it enveloped her and the cake and it held on to her deeply. And I was happy. I ate that piece of cake, which was not as good as it looked. And I picked up my stuff and I went to reception and I said, "Namaste. I would like to check out early." And after having to negotiate with the lady at reception who wanted to charge me to leave early, sketchy, I say, "Look, whether you know it or not, I'm leaving in the next 20 minutes because I got to hike up and down that mountain." And I pick up my stuff and I pack my car and I start driving down towards Montreal. Windows open, afro not really moving in the wind, radio off, singing to myself, "Jaya Ganesha, Jaya Ganesha, Jaya Ganesha Paima." And in that moment, I realized that being there wasn't what reconnected me to me. Getting the hell out of there is what opened that door.
I'm here now with Katty Dioff. Katty, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Matt?
Doing okay. Thank you so much for joining me today to talk a little bit about your story, but also about you in general. I said, how are you doing? How are you doing? We've been asking everyone in COVID times, how have you been holding up? How's your life been affected? What's going on with you?
Oh, boy. where to start? COVID has been a challenge. I miss seeing my family all the time. I've got some nieces that are very important in my life, who are not getting as much auntie time as I feel that they need, or as that I need, basically. And it's been challenging. I had one of my siblings passed away, unfortunately, during COVID, not of COVID. And that was something to manage.
I'm so sorry.
Being able to come together. Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Yeah, not being able to come together as a family. And, we were able to do all of the interment stuff, but afterwards, you want to come together. You want to be a community. You want to tell some stories. You want to laugh. You want to cry together. And that's been the biggest impact, is the lack of community.
It's so crazy. I was just talking to Steven, our technician, about this, and our producer and editor who's listening right now. We've reached this point in this crisis where these major life events are happening, right? I mean, we've heard a lot of people talk about graduation, but funerals. My brother just had a baby. Steven's got a family wedding coming up. And we realize, like, these major milestones are... It's so... I don't even have words to describe how it has just shifted our lives, this disease, this situation.
Yeah, completely. I think it's making me realize how much I took for granted those moments of coming together. I love getting together with my family and arguing with certain key family members and things like that, but I missed that. And I didn't realize that not having it was going to have such a big impact. You know, spending time with friends and co-regulating also, you know, being able to process your feelings with someone other than your significant other or yourself if you're alone. I took it for granted quite so much.
Yeah. Oh, I totally hear you. What about creatively? I think you're such a creative person. You make so many great things in the city. Have you been able to get creative, to use that side of yourself?
I'll say it's been a struggle. Improv online is challenging. There's so many beautiful things happening, but I've been feeling a little blocked, to be honest. I find that it's hard for me to let myself get into that place where I can create or where I can get really silly, because everything feels so urgent and so hard. I'm struggling to find a bit of lightness, to be honest. And it's, you know, a lot of stuff that I enjoy doing, a lot of creative projects that I like participating in have a bit of a political leaning to them and all that, but it's just, I'm struggling to find that the silver lining in a lot of it. I enjoy being able to have time to reflect. I've been doing a whole lot of introspection. And I think that is perhaps the good thing to come out of this situation. But other than that, it's a doozy. It's hard to get creative. It's hard to let myself be silly, to let myself make mistakes. It feels like the stakes are very high for everything right now.
I mean, absolutely. One of the things I really want to talk about with you is to talk about some of these great conversations and this introspection, this opportunity for conversation that we're having. Obviously, inspired by the Black Lives Matter protests, we're having these really important conversations about our social communities, about our artistic communities. I know you just had a conversation online about this. I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about how you think we can keep these conversations going, how we can keep this momentum going, and how we can actually turn this into real action.
Yeah. In my opinion, I think there's something about... I had a conversation with Dr. Myrna Lashley on Zoom, and it'll be available online very soon. And she said something that really stuck with me while talking about allyship, and it was that we have to get uncomfortable. We just have to accept that when we sit in a place of comfort, we're not moving anything forward, not supporting people. We're forgetting about people who need to be, you know, who need to have their voices raised and who need to have platforms and whose issues we need to be able to debate in privileged spaces if there are groups that have less privilege than we do. So I think continuing these conversations is going to mean getting more and more uncomfortable and being okay with having disagreements. We have to be able to listen to one another while also not negating people's existence as well. But I think we have to just get comfortable getting uncomfortable, really. Mm. Really.
I mean, as I say, I mean, this is really, in preparing for this, I was listening to your story. My 6-year-old daughter heard a little bit of the story, and we started talking a little bit about it. It led to a conversation about privilege just from that opening where you were talking about different families and different income levels at the camp you're working at. And we tried to imagine what does it mean for a family to make $5,000 as income versus the level of comfort that we're used to in this house, or everything comes back to politics and she asks about Donald Trump and I have to talk about that level of comfort. But that these things are not isolated, these are connected. That it's a hard conversation to have with a 6-year-old, and I wish the circumstances were better, but I am grateful for this opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. Oh. it's so interesting because I find that kids see these differences and sometimes they can't name them. So it's really nice when they're, and I think it's more than nice, I think it's essential for adults to be able to name these things, because we're not all children are afforded the same level of protection from the hard issues of life. And, you know, from a race perspective, Black kids don't have the privilege of innocence as children. I find out I remember being told when I was, maybe 7, that I couldn't play with water guns because of the image that it portrays to the public and because of, you know, policing consequences. Absolutely. And those are things that, you know, kids who are in positions of privilege, whether it be, you know, cultural or financial or, you know, just access to education and things like that, they're going to be such change makers because they see it. They see it in the park. They see it in, you know, just playing with other kids. Why not name it? Because they're really good at naming injustice when they see it. Absolutely. Take away something from a child without a reason and they will tell you very quickly, that's not fair.
And I mean, it shouldn't surprise us that there are so many memes and videos of kids saying that's not fair when talking about seeing racism or examples of racism or simple explanations, because this is us. This is what the grown-ups have done. This is our fault. This isn't on the kids. But if we're going to improve things, we have to have these conversations. We have to have these difficult conversations.
They're difficult conversations, but I think the fun part, especially with children and youth, is that they're still able to see the hope, I think, where sometimes we forget that we're allowed to be hopeful as adults. I think we fall into these patterns where we go like, okay, well, the system isn't working. I'm just a cog. How do I change everything? Whereas kids go like, oh, everything's broken, but you know what? I'm going to bring a sandwich to my friend who never has lunch. And to them, that is making a huge impact because, yes, their world is a bit smaller, but we have something to learn from that. I think we as adults have to, you know, stand in humility and look at the way that, you know, those who are younger than us are able to sometimes break it down. You know, it's almost like a think global, act local version, but simplified. So I think that it's nice to have those conversations, and they don't have to be long because kids will at some point be like, okay, I would like to go color now. Thank you.
they definitely have a certain bandwidth. Yeah,
absolutely. And like, we also, I think, have to take that into account for ourselves, the amount of rest that is necessary right now. I know I've been exhausted, COVID, my sister, everything happening, you know, in the past 3 weeks, it takes a toll on our hearts. And right now I'm looking at rest as sort of a revolutionary act, because while there is a lot to do right now, it's not even a marathon. It's like an ultra marathon. I need to be able to keep fighting these things, you know, in 6 months, in 5 years, in 25 years. So if I burn myself out now, you know, burnout makes us cynical.
I was just going to say, this all feels so appropriate given the story we just heard, talking about taking a space and taking a breath and not being able to find it. Is this a story you've thought about much in this time or since you're telling? It's so crazy I'm saying this, 'cause it's only a few months ago that you told the story, but...
I have been thinking about that story a lot, because I need that space. Like, I've been hungry for it. I definitely would love to be able to get out of the city again and sort of test myself a little bit and see how I've evolved and how I can sit with stillness and calm now, as opposed to, you know, when I went to the ashram. So. I've been thinking about it a lot, and the meaning of stillness and my relationship to stillness is very different as well now. And I wonder also if I would be as quick to get up and leave or if I would want to sit in my discomfort a bit more right now.
There's one question I've asked every guest we've had for these interviews. We're looking for stories that people need to hear right now, whether these are stories of escapism or stories of that teach us something we need to learn. Do you have any recommendations for us? These can be literary stories, filmic stories, any kind of stories.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So this is something that's been bringing me a lot of joy. There's a TV show called We're Here on Crave for the Canadians. And it's like a Queer Eye situation, but with drag queens. And it is, you know, they go into these small little villages in rural America and they put on drag shows and they get members of the like very conservative communities to participate. And most often they're members of the community who are parents of queer kids who have, you know, been separated from, ostracized by their community, and these parents want to sort of find a way to connect with their children, or people who have always felt othered in their community. And it always ends up coming together in these beautiful celebrations that are vibrant and exciting and silly and wild, but at the same time so heartfelt. And that's given me a real chance to dive into emotion. Because it's so beautiful, and I've been so moved by these stories. And it's looking at how we can act in the face of injustice. And I think that it's really interesting. That really speaks to me.
That sounds great. I love it. Thank you so much, Caddy. It's so great to talk to you.
Thank you, Matt. I can't wait to see you. One day.
I know! It'll happen. It'll definitely
Thanks,
happen.
Matt, and thanks, Caddy, for joining us.
Yes, for sure. Thank you, Caddy, for taking the time with us. Caddy has had a ton of stuff going on, especially lately. We're going to post a link to Moving Forward Together, her conversation with Dr. Myrna Lashley, which she mentioned in our interview. We're also going to put in the show notes some other links to things you may want to check out to keep up those uncomfortable conversations that Caddy and I were talking about.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Until then.
Take it easy.
Thanks so much for listening to Confabulation. We're a nonprofit dedicated to the art of true life storytelling. We run monthly autobiographical storytelling shows in Montreal and Victoria. You can learn more about the show and sign up for our mailing list at confabulation.ca or check us out on social media where we're at Confab Stories. Confabulation the podcast is produced by our team, Deb Venslet, Stephen Trepanier, and me, Matt Goldberg. Special thanks to the Conseil des Arts de Montréal for their support of Confabulation. We couldn't do it without you.